Shadows of Eternity by Gregory Benford. Narrated by Karen Chilton.
From The Retreat by Henry Vaughan. When on some gilded cloud or flower my gazing soul would gaze an hour, and in those weaker glories spy some shadows of eternity. Falling in, she can feel somehow the gossamer sail craft's long nosedive into the red star's grav potential, as if her own body were there, plunging arrow quick, dozens of light years away. Her pod hummed, using her entire body to convey connections through its induced neural web. Sheets of sensation washed over her skin, bathed in a shower of penetrating responses, all coming from intricate flurries of her nervous system, the burr and tang of temperature, particle plasma flux, spectral flickers, kinesthetic glides and swivels, sharp images of the unending dark lit by a smoldering dot of a sun. These merged with her own inboard subsystems, coupled with high bitrate feeds the Artilex had already processed and smoothed from the sail craft's decades of laser-beamed signals back to Earthside. She went to fast forward and the sail craft plunged, its magnetic brakes on full. Down the potential well it flew into star-sprinkled dark. It heard no electromagnetics bearing patterns, from radio through to optical. Yet Earthside knew from a few pixels that one world here held an atmosphere out of equilibrium. Clear signs of life that used oxygen and methane. So, life, perhaps minds, but no technology that spoke in waves. This L-dwarf star was of the commonplace majority. Perhaps 75% or more of those stars in the disk, fully half of the total stellar mass in the galaxy. The craft chose its own path, looping intricately through repeated grav wraps around three gas giants in the outer system, losing delta Vs all the while. Now it had lost enough of its interstellar velocity to rummage among the inner worlds. One cold and gaunt, then the prize, long known from Earthside scopes, a super-Earth. The sail craft folded in its mag-web brake and deployed scopes as it swanned into a high orbit around the cloudy world. 1.63 Earth masses. Its burgundy star glowered down on cloud decks thick as pancakes in the morning. Rachel licked her lips. Here was the tasty truth, a world for the unwrapping. Smart and sure, the white metal bird blew itself into full plumage. Its inflatable beryllium sails shone in ruddy daylight, hollow body banners just tens of nanometers thick. The body swelled by low-pressure hydrogen. These it used to steer into lower orbit, scanning the orbit space for satellites, and finding none. The overseer Artilex inserted, correlates with the spectral strength of water, with strong water absorption lines as seen in clear atmosphere planets, with the weakest feature suggesting clouds and hazes. And she cut it off. Now, the main show. A self-guided human artifact plunging into a fresh solar system, embodying her. A hairless biped, so noble in reason, so infinite in faculties, heir to all creation, and an animal trapped in a box, really, just lying in a pod and sensing inputs that had flown on wings of electromagnetic song across the light years. This world she dubbed, to herself, wind-worn, for such it was, a thick atmosphere ripe with oxygen, smothered in good old nitrogen, yet beset with methane, too, clearly a world air out of chemical balance. Good. Life. Pearly cloud decks prevented much downseeing. The Artelec aboard the craft had elected to deploy its one great immersion resource, the balloon. The smart aero package fell away on its own breaking wings and soon enough slammed through the cottony clouds, its brake shell burning away, and into a realm of thick, filmy air. Blithe spirit, bird thou never wert, blazing through alien skies as a buzzing firework. The balloon popped into a white teardrop, lighter than this sluggish air, and with its heater, able to stay buoyant. 10 kilometers below the land opened, solemn dark green and cloud-shrouded. The first clear glimpse below was of big, smooth, white-cap ocean waves that crashed like armies against the rearing snow-white mountains guarding the continents. I should have called it Raw World, she thought. Below the balloon, she watched alien vistas unfurl. Big, broad, brown rivers, lakes, crags. The vegetation was gray and black, not green, just as the astrobio people had said. Around small red stars, plants needed to harvest all the ruddy glow. So they evolved to take in all the spectrum, with little to fear from the small slice of ultraviolet, since it was weak. She watched the land and air carefully as the balloon skated tens of kilometers above, its cameras panning to take it all in. She did a close-up of the data feed, saw small birds flapping below, and roads. She froze the image. Small dots that might be vehicles. Yes. She watched them crawl along. They went to caves, entrances to large hills that had slits of windows in their slopes, rank upon rank of them, orderly, horizontal, all the way to the summit. Hills upon hills marching to the distant horizon, hills of grassland, hills of rumpled brown rectangular stone, hills with great clefts sharpening their edges. Artificial hills. Hailstones rattled on the balloon. Microphones recorded long shrills, the trembling of tin and sheets, snapping steel strands, harsh, brittle rings. Distant bellows, perhaps from the barrel-chested, six-footed, ambulating creatures far below in their herds of many. Once the hail cleared, the balloon could see things the size of houses burrowing into moist soil. After something, yawning herbivore throngs looked up at the balloon, showing great rows of rounded molars. Forests, animals, birds, all moved before the surging winds. The balloon acoustic microphones caught a huge manta ray-like thing conning flap, 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 flap across the roiling sky, somehow navigating through. She thought, crazy thing, looks like it escaped from a cartoon on video, with its long lazy strokes and manic grin that she saw was a scissor smile sporting long teeth on a bird, then black. End of craft report number 3069, a flat statement told her. An interstellar spacecraft moving at 100 kilometers per second does not have accidents. Accidents have it. The craft turns into a blur of tumbling fragments inside a second. She let herself drift up from the immersed state, slowly letting the alien landscape seep from her mind. It was over. She knew going in that the mission had snapped off, never heard from again. The balloon, its gossamer-thin carbon nanotube and graphene covered in conductive metal skin, the super lightweight Rectina, all gone. Something had blocked their transmissions. Accident? Intervention? No one knew. The mission report ended in a blank wall. But she had needed to feel it. She knew full well this encounter lived only in thick bricks of data, info dense and rigid. The lived experience was real, just turned into zeros and ones. Bringing across light years their stuttering enlightenments to the Suttee Library. Still, it mattered as an abrupt lesson in how hard interstellar exploration through sailcraft was, and how sudden the deaths of such adventurers. When she climbed from the pod, she ached all over, stretched, wheezed. Yet she had done no true exercise, except in her mind. She was late for her appointment, but she paused to look up through the crystal dome at good old Earth, a multicolored crescent marble in the lunar sky. All but the last few centuries of human history had played out there. Throughout that history, men and women had filled in the dark unknowns with imagination. So expeditions crossed oceans in high vacuum until new lands came into view. In just a few thousand years, go back that far and you would see Sumerian ziggurats whose star maps cartooned the sky with imagined constellations and traced destinies through star-based prognostications. Someday, a robotic follow-up probe might fall again toward the red star she had just seen, to become the Schliemann of this alien Troy. That might happen. There were so many stars to reach out and see, and more candidates by the day. Now she could swim by other strange distant worlds and feel them, fed by slabs of data, and still sense the great dark unknowns, which was her job. The prefect raised an eyebrow, pursed his leathery lips. "I gather you are behind in your summations." "A flat fact." "I am, yes. I have been taking a careful review of some expedition records." "You are a trainee, not a librarian. Nor, if you continue this way, much hope of becoming one. Best to shape your skills to the essentials." "I think I can better fathom records if I see the planetary explorations in direct sensing." His face soured more, lips turned down, his frown a ladder of creases. Legendarily, he favored the scowl over the smile. She had to change the dynamic here. She stood. "My, you have a window." She had never seen one in a lunar office. "I like to have some perspective." Outside was the sweep of the plaza, pearly in the earth shine. "A view, yes, I can see." "I like some separation from the rest of all this. Also, the glass is a constant temptation." "To what?" "Throw something through it, usually a student, sometimes a trainee, such as you." "Ah, I fly-in recordings will not reward mere poking around. They have been studied in great detail and can yield nothing more, especially this red dwarf you just sensed." "I am not just reviewing." "No, you were taking up pod time with full sense fly-by data." "It was odd how it suddenly cut off. Many expeditions simply died, yes. Accident, equipment failure. Those were the early days, full of verve, over a century ago. Ignore them. I want to see more of your time spent in the hard work. Take up third-level messages and work with the Artilex to advance our understanding. Remember, these are not linear languages at level 3.
I will try. And do not use the pods to simply joyride on old explorations. He turned toward the view and she realized her appointment was over. At least she didn't have to exit through the window. Quick! A world in a few passing hours, then to sum it up in the brittle frame of linear sentences, the frail girders of mere flat words. A ruddy world with lesser grav, one huge sprawl of a continent, plus lesser landmass in the other hemisphere, of humped and dirty rock-rimmed mountains, skies the color of crisp sand, spiky mountains cut into curiously precise pie slices by iodine rivers that flow to the continental center, making a vast, somber bay of jade waters. Go closer, lower. Giant caterpillars stretched in trees as tall as mountains. The low grav here made for monsters. Forested slopes and close up were mushroom trees of violent orange, huge blue birds with wings like parachutes, bills shaped like death's sickle, feathers like flapping palm fronds, a plain of plants evoking erect oak leaves, smaller growths resembling inside-out umbrellas, rain turning to snowflakes at high noon on the equator, rain like drops of blood in the rocky highlands, mists glowing like white fire in the valleys, chasms radiating in mountain ranges like fractures in frosted window panes, winding rivers in the fevered tropics, shapely as women's torsos or slim violins, ice caps featuring swollen growths like blue berets, storms that solidified like hurled hammerheads across tropical isles, clouds drifting like pregnant purple cows, wind-blastic rockwork in curious curved forms, like frozen music, lurching beasts, all angles and ribs, grazing across mustard grasslands. The sailcraft played out its fat helium balloons, which went roving, roving, roving until they ran out of lift. These captured close up the many odd beasts, eyed landscapes for buildings, assayed the sweep of land for betraying rectangles, signs of intelligence, or else of obsessive animals who knew Euclid in their souls. Grazers aplenty swept by under the balloon's down-looking eyes, plus carnivores, big and furred and fanged. The craft saw big floater insects, too, with steering wings and armor plates and strange, inexplicable, leggy bits like antennae. These creatures eyed the balloon uneasily, braying roars into the acoustic balloon ears. Some angular beasts gazed upward warily, as if the balloon were a new foe in their air. They bristled, blared, and thrust up narrow snouts that ended in the blunt truth of mouths like a pair of pliers. Some, in a narrow canyon lined with goat-like shambling monoliths, shot lances at the balloon eye, which fell far short. Still, perhaps a compliment of sorts. And again, roads, towns tucked under ample tree canopies, no electromagnetic emissions beyond the faint and local, cities under regular humps of hills, ships dotted the inland sea, white and slender. Yet this advanced society had only a weak signature in the radio, microwaves, and in the other bands, no signals at all. Then the pod went silent. Done. Another failed expedition. She lingered a while in the quiet, biting her lip. She wondered if silence was not the true state of the universe, now that the ancestral acoustics of the Big Bang had faded into scratch marks in the microwave sky. Silence, far more noble than humanity's squeaks. This world had been a treat, really. She took planetary records at random, not really knowing what she was seeking. Most worlds in the habitable zone were of a sameness, solemn planets sleeping in the silence of ice and stone, sea worlds awash in dark purple waters, betraying no life, only its eventual prospect. Baked plains of ancient lava, unblessed by seas or even ponds, a likely match for a collision with a wandering water world, should orbital dynamics ever bring one from further out. A Newtonian miracle awaiting. Black volcanic corkscrews spiraling up to the atmospheric roof of planets still in process, getting baked to oblivion. Vast planets of crawling slime, oceans lapping against barren shores, plankton mats the size of continents. To find a mature, thriving biosphere was a blessing. She savored them in the sensory auditorium of her snug pod. She began to favor the dwarf suns and their narrow habitable zones. Such stars lived long, as old as the galaxy's 10 billion years, yet scarcely a fraction along their stable lifespans. So, too, their worlds had millions of millennia to work their slow, gravid marvels. She studied them whenever she could manage the time, outside her own work and research at the Interstellar Library. These labors, she felt, were perhaps foolish, but also a proud thing to do, as a fleck of dust condemned to know it is a fleck of dust. Rachel said to her friend Kat Kajin, "I'm going crazy, or maybe I've already arrived." "Brain fried with work, maybe," Kat Kajin said with a sardonic eye roll, sipping a barely acceptable red wine. But also the only available, fresh from the fragrant farm domes deep underground. Rachel still wore the single white patch on her collar, the mark of the least, as they were known. One-patchers were greener than summer grass. Katkajin had two. So was one leg up in the ladder from trainee to librarian. Amid the hub and bub of tech talk of the other trainees, she was sporting a fine plum-colored coat with a laced waistcoat in a deftly contrasting shade, crossed diagonally with a red ribbon. With leggings and heater shoes, current lunar fashion stressed subtle resistance against the creeping cold of their world, despite the ferocious warmth shed by their reactors. Rachel just wore heavy sued wool dresses and severe gray, plus close-weave black tights. All free downloads and printouts, but yes, dull. Thrifty was not nifty here. But she didn't care. She wanted to escape notice, to tend her own internal gardens. "I've added to my historical studies of the dwarf stars," Rachel made herself say amid the babble of the open-air restaurant, gazing down on the gray work expanses of the lunar plain below. "Something odd going on there." "Great era, that was," Kat Kajin said, distracted by the stellar displays that coursed across their social area ceilings. Rachel thought the images odd, skies of galaxies and erupting stars. The psyker said such spectacles fended off the boxed-in phobias that plagued many loonies. "Centuries ago, right? First close-ups of the neighbors, the 550 scopes just getting started. I'm looking at the old missions, the microwave-beamed sail ships that scoped out the nearbys." Katkajin eyed a passing guy, maybe looking for an evening elsewhere. Some of the higher-ups had their own singleton rooms, great for parties and, of course, a romantic perk. Katkajin yawned, a clear come-on signal, but the guy just kept moving. "Yeah, long before we knew what a web of interstellar messaging there was." Rachel leaned forward to keep Catkajin from diversions. I'm looking at the 550 lens data, too. Plenty of life-bearing planets around the galaxy's dwarfs, that says. Some with signs of a civilization, too. But most dwarf star globes are shrouded in clouds. Hard to see. Indeed, Rachel loved roving through the images gathered from coasting telescopes of the great theater in the sky. The worlds of the galaxy itself on display. The sun's focus spot was 550 AU out, where gravity gathered starlight into an intense pencil. The many sailship telescopes there fed back distorted images of faraway solar systems, as if seen through a funhouse mirror. Rachel had learned much by scanning those images. The talent for not dying was distributed undemocratically. Few worlds could dance blithely through a giga-year, or far from their parent star. So many planets, crisp and dry, cloudy and cool, cratered yet with shimmering blue atmospheres, and stars, sometimes in crowded clusters, at times seen close up and going nova in bright, virulent streamers, or in tight orbits around unseen companions that might be neutron stars or black holes. After a while, even exotic alien landscapes became repetitious for her. Blue-green mountain ranges scoured by deep gray rivers, placid oceans brimming with green scum, arid, tan desert worlds ground down under heavy, brooding brown atmospheres. Many ways for life to blossom or die. Ice worlds aplenty beneath starry skies. Grasslands with four-footed herds roaming as volcanoes belched red streamers in the distance. Oceans with huge beasts wallowing in enormous crashing waves. Places hard to identify in the swirling pink mists. Life adapts, indeed. Catkajin rolled her eyes. That improves your stats? In time, sure. Mostly I just follow my nose. Catkajin leaned forward too, her ironic wry grin mocking. Look. Your nose should lead you to use the seekers of script more. You're behind in code processing. Way behind, gal. Meaning, of course, look, I have two patches already. The seekers of script were supposedly below trainees, but more experienced in deciphering SETI messages, using brute force methods from cryptology. They assisted trainees and reported to librarians. Rachel reported to a prefect, and Catkajin, at a higher level, now answered to the enigmatic Nauts. All the staff layering the SETI library had amassed through two centuries of calcification. Rachel dodged the advice. How's your Naut? Let's say it relishes the cadences of the language. Ah, you mean it's an incorrigible windbag? Apparently having no actual sexual organs led to verbal ejaculations instead. Just another gender choice, it seemed. Right, downright gushy. Catkajin had changed her hair to tarnished silver, but her voice was still scrap brass. Rachel envied her ability to conform to library's Byzantine styles. Clothes and skin enhancers were the classic methods of competition and display. Men wore Rapunzel hair down to the shoulder blades at the moment. Women had great tangled thickets of hair in the armpits, often displayed in string shirts. All this, despite the strange blend of decadent excess and harsh asceticism that prevailed in elite library culture. To Rachel, this was a special puzzle comparable to a labyrinthine SETI message. I heard they thinned some trainees last week, Katkajend whispered, glancing around. No announcement, just poof. You notice some are missing. Part of the method, Rachel said. They had seen this before, those trainees of both sexes, or even none, who had gotten by Earthside by being pert, pretty, perky, were soon memories. The library had begun as a minor academic offshoot, back when there were few SETI messages and none had been well deciphered. Under rigorous mathematical methods, Artilex, an objective though human minds like the Nauts, it had grown in prestige and influence into a citadel where there was a 5-year wait for a windowless office. Rachel said, I hear some trainees are planning a demonstration against these abrupt firings. Another of Katkajin's patented eye rolls. I mentioned that rumor to my own prefect. I got one of her rare laughs. She said, demonstrations never achieve anything. If they did, we wouldn't allow them. Ah, a word to the wise? Look, my nun-like friend, you've got to get style here. Dig into the ramified SETI messages, thousands of them thick as bees, lurking back there in the vaults. Katkajin let her exasperation out in darting phrases. Learn the pleasure in dispute, in dialectic, in dazzle. Get some freelance dash, peacock strut, daring hypotheses, knockabout synthesis, and get laid. Rachel felt her face tighten, struggled to manage a smile. I'm, you know, wrong time of the month. Come on, gal. Eyes flaring, grin spreading, hands shooting out. When I'm on my period, I just stand in the shower and watch blood run down my legs into the drain and imagine I am a warrior princess who is standing in the aftermath of a battle where I murdered all my enemies. At the moment, Rachel was mostly about cramp diarrhea, which meant maybe stay away from the claustrophobic pod and the dwarf stars. You don't want to be in the next culling, my friend. Rachel allowed herself a thin, uncertain smile. Maybe they keep me on simply to serve as a warning to others. The library reception was on the rampart walk above the main plaza. The setting implied antiquity. Vaulted and corbelled ceilings, columns sporting reverse flutings and crowned with Corinthian elegance. In a community that spent most of its time in small rooms with faintly oily air, taking advantage of views was essential for social functions. Crescent Earth was just a sliver, a comma, a single eyelash in the star-rich sky. She looked for the prefect, but he was not in the murmuring crowd. Probably feasting inside on Muscovy duck with pears and greens. Balsamico, she thought, succumbing to the lunar cliche of fixating on food. The library hierarchy emerged most visibly in what luxuries one could afford. Rumors proposed fragrant, exotic dishes none had ever seen, but thought they scented in the closed air of the library. To the nose, there were seemingly few secrets. Whatever a Muscovy duck might be, keeping one a secret seemed impossible. Still, there were ever more rumors about the sealed and secured portions of the library where only prefects, or better, could venture. A Mecha band played its typical clunkada-clunkada rhythm, and she found herself among some other trainees, buzzing with talk about Earthside matters. She joined the line for the stand-up banquet in 0.18G, not a problem. Above, moonbirds looking like paint-splattered sparrows banked and swirled. These had plenty of parrot genes, and others swooped in flocks of sharply elongated eagles, and even a huge impossibility she called Moby Hawk. There was sweet-smelling bread made from an unpronounceable root vegetable, molasses, something called Hoppin' John, and tart collard greens, plus rich butter from goat's milk. She favored the usual pickup food of crickets, bugs, and odd crispy-fried creatures with Byzantine names, and the obligatory pork and chicken. Considering, she pitied the vegetarians. Most went back earthside soon enough. She wandered, not spotting any friends, and into a circle discussing the deaths in the latest human cold sleep method. "And they all died within a 2-year span," a slim woman said mournfully. "I wish they would stop inflicting such torture on us." "Torture? Scan the news at your own risk," she thought. She was a bit tired of the lunar sophisticates' habit, their narcissism of borrowed tragedy. It came from viewing from afar, or at least far enough, the perpetual disasters on overcrowded Earth. It struck her as inverted empathy. Relate some tragedy from the news and express your sad-eyed care, and soon enough, other people's suffering becomes about you. You convey with raised eyebrow or warped lips that you're owed some measure of the deference and compassion that the victims are. They knew the risks going in, the thin woman frowned. "Well, I'm sure, but, and chose to take them. Too bad it failed, but honestly, how likely is it that we mammals, whose sole hibernators are bears and the like, could take decades of cold sleep?" "Well, they've been working on this for, what, a century? And I think the scientists know what they're doing." The woman gave Rachel a sharp look that should have stuck several centimeters out of her back. "Seems not. They all died?" Yes, 25. Some made it for the 6 years mark, but none past 8. How'd they die?" "The connectomic scientists say their slowed metabolism just stopped, wouldn't restart." A light-haired brown man added with a smack of lips, "The report said when they opened the life chests, there was a distinct smell of porcini risotto, armpits filled with fungus." A big laugh. This was enough to disband the group before Rachel got in too deep, but something in the issue tickled her mind. Did a century of trying cold sleep mean it just wasn't possible for complex animals, including aliens? If so, no visitors, no crewed starships. Even if civilizations arose and persisted, they could only visit other stars robotically. Then, all interstellar contacts were the province of artificial intelligences. A glimmering of an idea. "Maybe. I have noted that you are disobeying," the prefect said at her elbow. "Oh, you startled me." Somehow the prefect's bald head loomed large out here in the open. Or maybe it just reminds me of how many dead worlds I've seen. "You are spending pod time on old reconnaissance. I will have to write a report." Not a flicker of emotion. Write a report meant blocking her from becoming a librarian, maybe forever. "I have an idea I'm pursuing." Not quite a lie. A long, slow blink, as if thinking. "I give you 3 days to stop." The prefect turned and walked away, with the long lope those born on the moon made in a graceful sway.